we want to help those who are truly deserving. If a woman is empowered, she has the ability to change the fate of her entire family. Everyone has to have a responsibility towards society. Everyone has to be socially responsible.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Reach Her Podcast. We hear you, and this is a platform for all budding women out there. This is Madhumati here with you to host our guest today. Let's welcome the very humble Sirisha ma'am. She is the founder of the Asra Foundation and the principal consultant of Infosys. Welcome, ma'am.
Hi, hi, Madhumati. Hi, ma'am. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, ma'am. We are glad that you're here. So, how's everything, ma'am? How's the lockdown condition over there? Is everything fine over there?
I wish things will get better soon. I mean, a lot of people are struggling, a lot of places.
Yes. We hope, like, things need to get moving, right? Only after the lockdown, everything will be fine. So, tell us about the Asra Foundation. What do you do in the foundation?
Yeah, so Asra has been set up like three and a half years ago. But the thought of Asra has been with me like forever. I mean, I've been working, though without the name Asra, I've been working voluntarily for quite some time. And formally we got registered 3.5 years ago. And our primary objective is women empowerment. And we strongly believe that it is only through proper quality education that women empowerment is possible. So the main area of work for Asra is towards promoting women education, girl child education. So when I say education, it is not just academics, but it is the all-round education. Like we also help the schools with enabling libraries, science labs, computer labs, physical education equipment, and also towards health and sanity, like separate toilets for girl students and availability of sanitary products for the girl children. So it is primarily creating a very safe, healthy and comfortable environment for girls to pursue their education. That is the primary objective. And now recently, like from past 2 years, we have extended this beyond girl children to specially able, like physically challenged or visually impaired people. We have extended our support to them also. It is very difficult for the specially challenged people to lead their lives. I mean, something for us which is very simple, a very simple activity, is actually a big challenge for them. And they need lot of they have a lot of special requirements, which are expensive also. Like if visually impaired children, for example, they use a separate language, Braille, to read and to write, and that needs a special kind of paper, that needs special kind of computer keyboards. So there are a lot of special requirements they have and very limited means they have. Like if someone is wheelchair ridden, physically challenged, they need ramps, they do not have access to public transportation, we do not have that facilities. Even most of our schools or public offices or government offices, they are not equipped to actually have these people around. I mean, we don't have ramps, we don't have railings for them to hold, separate lavatories or toilets for them. So there are a lot of challenges for even a very simple activity we normal people do, regular people do. It is a challenge for them actually. So we've realized that, and for the past 2 years we have extended our support to these organizations as well.
Ma'am, when I was going through your website, the Asra website, I found that you had three different categories, like Siksha, Rahat and Diya and all these. So what are they? Could you explain about that?
Yes. Siksha is a program primarily for education of girl children. And Rahat is, as I explained, the other part. I mean, apart from the academics, the health and sanitation we provide. We provide first aid kits, we replenish the first aid kits and we provide sanitary supplies for girl children. I mean, there are a lot of girl children and women in India who cannot even afford to have a clean and proper sanitary methods. And they use a lot of crude methods, and a lot of almost around 7 to 8% of women die every year because of using lack of proper sanitary products. So that's what we provide using Rahat. And Diya is a very small initiative we started where we have a exchange. It's like an exchange program where we have children from smaller schools or government schools interact with children from international and bigger schools, share their experiences, exchange gifts, you know, that kind of initiative which we usually conduct during Diwali. So we approach big schools and we give them some we give them requirement which is like which will cost less than 100 rupees, like your examination pad, geometry boxes, atlas, world maps, you know, something very simple. We give them a list which it's not mandatory. If they want to participate, they can buy those, they can wrap, gift wrap them, they can make cards or something like that. Similarly, for the other school, we provide them with earthen lamps and colors. We ask them to paint it and create greeting cards. And then we invite those kids to come to this government school, or government school kids to visit there and exchange those gifts and interact. We conduct some games and events. It's just, just so they see the other side of the world. Interact.
It's a real beautiful gesture, ma'am.
And kids, and for kids, it doesn't matter. They just exchange gifts and they play. That really shows the beauty of childhood.
True. Like, this Siksha and Rahat, that is a very important service that people will need. But when you talk about Diya, I don't know. I just feel goosebumps all over me because it involves a lot of emotions more than just providing a service, right? So I'm more curious about Diya now. So how has the outcome been of Diya, ma'am? Like, how have people felt, children felt about it?
It was very heartening to actually see kids react to each other. And my kid, he himself, I mean, was part of that program. So he still has that lamp, the earthen lamp. He uses it for past 2 Diwali. He lights it, he turns it off, and then he hides it. And he cherishes it. A lot of people tell me, they write afterwards saying that it is very good. And one girl actually, she actually asked for blue ribbons.
Okay.
And such a small wish, you know, just yeah. She wanted
blue ribbons.
And when she got that, she was so happy. She said, I'm the luckiest girl in the world.
That is so touching, actually. And these kind of initiatives, like, since it involves more of children from all sectors, even the people, students from bigger schools have that feeling. How does it feel to gift? And they get to see each other's lives from different angles, right?
And they also get to know how privileged they are.
Yeah.
I mean, the kind of things they enjoy, they do understand that it is not all that easy. There are a lot of people who don't have what they have.
It's
revealing for them too. But then kids being kids, they actually play together and enjoy.
Yeah. They have the right time to, see that gratefulness in them. Because since child, if they're brought up, if they see, get to see a lot of things, that concern is there within them. Because we see many bullying and many things happening in the high school and all these things. If these initiatives are brought in, it is really beneficial even for the privileged children along with them. So thanks for that. Thanks for that, ma'am. So you said that you've been doing this even before this 3.5 years, right? So how do you reach out to these kind of people? How do you identify that they need help, and how did you go approach them, ma'am?
See, initially I also did not know where to start, so I just blindly went to all schools nearby where I stay. And I started telling them I want to help in some way or the other with education, with with all these activities. It took some time for me to figure out how to exactly, you know, put a process to it. But I started just like that. I just went and approached schools. And I have to tell, they have been very, very, very helpful. The schools, the teachers, a lot of students I fund now, I get the references from teachers. In fact, very recently, from past 2 years, we are funding 20 girls from a small town in Andhra Pradesh. So the teacher actually, she was in one of the lectures that I've delivered somewhere. And she heard that, she remembers our foundation name. And when she has encountered a situation in her college where around 20 girls, they couldn't pay a fee and they had to discontinue their education, she approached me, informing that these girl children are very smart kids. I mean, they're very academically very good, but they're not able to pursue because their parents are artisans, you know, those who paint, do this pottery and painting on the pottery, and those who make this jute baskets and things like that. And that year it was not good for them and they were not able to sponsor or afford the education. So in fact, she reached out to me and we were able to help them. It's the second year. I think one more year they will be out of college, graduated also. So many teachers are there, many principals are there who reach out like that. And there are many schools where I went who keep aside some seats for free. Yeah. Because I am funding for education from my organization. There are some schools which offer seats for free. They'll ask only one thing, that you bring the truly eligible people, truly deserving people, and we are willing to give the seat. There are schools like that. There are teachers like that. There are parents, particularly women I see, I mean the mothers, even though their fathers are, you know, they drink and they don't come home frequently, but their mothers are very determined to get their children educated. So they come and meet us, and that is how we get to know. We do our interview process though, because we want to help those who are truly deserving. So we do our interview process, we get their academic results, we get their income certificates, and then we.
Now, ma'am, given this COVID situation, we see like the worst hit people are people below the poverty line, because maybe in terms of health and sanitation or in terms of their financial stability, everything is very getting bad for them. So after this is over, when they'll have to, when they need help actually, and they, especially for education, if they have to reach out to you, is there any means that they can reach out to you? How can they reach out?
Yeah. They can reach out to our telephone number or through online, or primarily to phone. Those who cannot go through online, they can reach out to our ASRA helpline number as well as the WhatsApp number, and we'll try to help as much as we can.
Thank you, ma'am. So now you've been doing this since quite a long time, but officially it's just 3.5 years. But even before that, how did you get inspired? I mean, when did you get this thought that you will have to do it, and from where did this come?
It's partly my own struggle. My father was an advocate. And he also led a, I mean, he was from the beginning, he was a social worker, and he used to do a lot of help and a lot of legal advice and legal services he used to provide to women particularly. And I very vividly remember him telling me that if a woman is self-sustained, if a woman is empowered, she has the ability to change the fate of her entire family, her children, and the generations to come. He strongly believed in that. He always used to tell me that. I never understood it that time. But then while I was studying, he passed away, unfortunately. And after that, I myself had a lot of challenging experience pursuing my education. And academics are very expensive. Usually people won't think of it that way because their parents pay for their fees. So we don't even have an idea how expensive they are. but they are very expensive, and it I had my own struggle and story completing my education, partly full time, and later I started working, and then I did few of my degrees, my MPhil or my IIT diploma, everything I did it through correspondence because I couldn't afford full time. So I had my own struggle. So that is when that day itself I thought that I will come across this, I will earn some money, I will become self-sustained, and I will help at least 10 women like me, was the target I had. That is what, with that target I started. Now it is like 10 times what my target was. So it will be 1,000 times.
We also hope for it. And what you are doing now is not just what you wanted to do. You are inspiring more people, ma'am. Like, just with this, I'm stuck with this Diya concept. I mean, you are telling that to your to the children right from that age, like what your dad told you. Now you're telling it to somebody else, and it will surely grow with them. As they grow up, even that concept is going to grow with them. Yes, ma'am. So, talking about your career at Infosys, ma'am, you see this age, like many people shift their jobs within like 1 or 2 years or like that. But you have stayed with Infosys for 8+ years by now. So, how was the journey? How what is your experience there?
Yeah, I think it's more than 9 years now in Infosys, and overall, I have around 15 years experience in IT. I have learned a lot from IT profession. Particularly, you get to meet with a lot of different types of people, different cultures from all over the world, and you get to meet them, you get to discuss solutions, and it really opens one's limitations, one's horizon. It really opens up a lot of space, and you get to see, I got to do a lot of things I never dreamt of or I never did before. So it is a very enriching experience, and I love my job at Infosys. It is not only a breadwinner for me, but for a lot of the girls. Yeah, it changed life, and I'm very thankful to my company and to all my colleagues and my managers for giving that opportunity to me. And it's a very enriching experience working in IT industry. It gives a lot of confidence. It gives a lot of boldness, to just step in and get things done.
True. Because IT sector is a breakthrough, because all these traditional kind of companies, you take mechanical or manufacturing or any such companies, those are all mostly dominated by men. So when it comes to IT, it started off being like, a breakthrough for people, and everybody started coming in. So ma'am, throughout your 14 years of experience, did you face any anything called glass ceiling? Because most women, even at the powerful positions, are talking about this glass ceiling. So did you face anything? What was your perspective?
A woman's life, particularly in India, and a working parents' life, working mother's life, is always difficult. It is not easy. That's one fact. There is no sugar coating to it. It is definitely tough. There definitely will be bias at some stage or the other. And whatever work area it is, it's not just IT, any work area, not only in work, and in the whole society, you have a kind of stigma associated with women doing something, women being forward, women leading. Yeah. It is always there. Having said that, what we are fighting now, our fight now is even more difficult, because what we are facing now is something called as second generation gender bias. Whereas earlier it was the first generation bias is like where your forefathers, my forefathers, or even sometimes, even now in some rural parts of India, we have people who tell you straightforward, you are a woman, you can't do this. Yeah. You shouldn't be doing this, you should be wearing like this, you should be staying like this. That was the kind of bias we had. Or even in some places it is still there. But what we face now as working women is a second generation gender bias, where the bias is not visible. It is actually invisible. I mean, people don't come to you and say, I'm not giving you this opportunity because you are a woman. They won't say that. Yeah. At some point, then you'll figure it out. Okay, I didn't get it because of this reason.
Yeah.
It's more difficult because this is here, the enemy is not visible. You do not know the enemy. And when I say enemy again, I'm not trying to brutalize men here. It is not that they're consciously doing it. So this second generation gender bias is mostly, one, it is social stigma, and two, it is unconscious bias. They themselves do not know that they're doing the bias. Like, for example, if there's a very senior manager or a leader who starts some initiatives, so ideally he goes for a fag or for a coffee with some of his junior colleagues, ideally men, because you're comfortable calling them for a coffee. So he discusses with them, and when it eventually materializes, obviously he will give the job.
Yeah.
So unconsciously he has eliminated an opportunity for women. Yeah. We don't even know that we lost that opportunity. He doesn't even know that, you know, he did a bias there.
Yeah.
So it is unconscious, it is social stigma. Like, we don't get much opportunities to socialize or to increase our network because of, again, the same reason. Late night parties, and usually how you hang around with your colleagues, go for a drink or watch a game together, which usually they don't call women.
Yeah.
And these biases are not visible, but they are there. And it will take a long time for it to go away completely.
Yeah.
Then I'm not sure of other workplaces, but in IT profession, definitely many organizations, including Infosys, they're doing a lot of work towards inclusivity and diversity. So there's a lot of education and awareness that is needed for both, for women also and for men also.
Yeah.
Women also have to realize they cannot work in a conventional way now. Whatever have told to them, they have to break that convention.
The bargain has to be from both the sides.
Yeah, they have to come out of it. That is what is the glass ceiling that women has to break.
Yeah.
They have come out of their inhibitions and what they have been led to believe so far. Men also have to, you know, understand that the changing times and the bias. So it's two way. Both of us need education, and a lot of people are trying.
Yeah.
A lot has to still be done. But individually, everyone has to make an effort to come out of
it. Yeah. That was a clear-cut explanation. Because most of the times what happens is, when we talk about glass ceiling, it is always one-sided. Because it's like women are here and men are unconsciously being biased. But now that you told that we need to break a bit of glass, this kind of unconscious biases. So that was a really needed one. So ma'am, you've also involved in this education. You believe that education is very much important. So given this current situation, do you think the students, maybe like school students or the college graduates or anybody like that, are they given the proper kind of education that is needed in the market?
See, I would say the current education system, if your question is on the current education system, I would say it is well equipped, actually, to be very honest. I can't comment about the details of curriculum and all, I'm not qualified for that. But what I personally feel is we do have a proper education system in place. But again, as I was telling earlier, education is not just academics,
yeah,
not what you learn from the school or from the college. Children usually are very intuitive, they're very observant, and they keep observing things, they grasp them very quickly at that age, and they absorb it and they live it.
Mm-hmm.
So how the society around them behaves also has a very deep impact on them.
Okay.
So for example, in the school, your teacher, you have this paper, value education paper. The teachers come, they follow the traffic rules, respect elders, don't lie. They teach all those. Kids learn all that and come home. But on the way home, your parent breaks the traffic rule and comes saying that, ma'am, I'm getting late to office. What lesson you're teaching them? I mean, one way we are saying respect elders, and in our own houses we see parents not respecting grandparents, or some places we see parents not respecting your house help. maids or drivers, you don't treat them with dignity. And kids observe, they observe a lot, and they clearly see the difference of what they're being taught versus what they're actually seeing in the real life. And in this kind of situation, you can't say that you have to change that. You have to change the education system. It is doing its job.
True.
What is not doing its job is this social thing that each individual is not following. Everyone has to have a responsibility towards society. Everyone has to be socially responsible. I'm not saying do some very big thing or something like that, but small things if we are socially responsible. In fact, social responsibility is something which is totally underrated in India. We don't really care about others.
Yeah.
We don't really care how our actions are going to impact our children or our neighbors. We don't really care. I mean, we litter everywhere, we break traffic rules. There are a lot of things like that we do. So social responsibility, I think, is where it's the fundamental cause for all the issues we are having, for all the problems that children are facing. If everyone, each one of us are responsible in a small way, not big things, but in a very small way, be environmental friendly, don't litter, do your waste management properly, conserve water and electricity, follow traffic rules. These are very, very simple, fundamental things. And we are living as if there is no tomorrow.
Hmm.
We are we are wasting with the amount of pollution, environment, the thing we are doing to environment. We are living as if there is no tomorrow. We are only concentrating on accumulating money or wealth for our children.
Yeah.
Our children are not able to do anything with that wealth tomorrow when they don't have fresh breathe or fresh air or a glass of pure water. What are they going to do with the money?
That social responsibility.
Quality of life is not there. That social responsibility is very, very lacking in our country. As in many developing countries, if you see the West or the developed countries, you see people are very conscious about this kind of thing. So that, I think more than education, this is what needs to...
These are what that tomorrow, like these are the small things that you feed in people is what that is going to be when you make a big achievement or something. Like now if you teach the children to break the rules and break the traffic rules and not care about the environment, when they become entrepreneurs or when they become big people, that is what is going to influence them completely.
That is what they will do, that is what their children will do, you're ruining your whole generation.
Yeah. So, ma'am, in this particular year and this generation, there are many people who are completing the graduation and going for being a job seeker. So, how important is this quality of leadership in an organization or in a society itself?
See, leadership, particularly for women, is very, very important. Why I'm saying this is, if we have started a job at the age of, 20, 21, 22, at that age, typically, when you get graduated and start job, 20 years before that, which is when you are 1 year, 2 years old itself, women are taught that you should not speak loud, you should not ask questions, you should not get noticed, don't laugh loud, speak loud, don't talk loud, don't do this, don't do that, don't go there, don't sit here, don't stand there.
Don't sit like this.
Don't sit like this, yes. Don't laugh loudly, I particularly remember that. Don't laugh loud, don't talk loudly, don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Don't try to do something that you get noticed, in the school or college or whatever. So we have been fed for 20 years, right? Whatever possibility that a woman has to become leader has been taken away from her 2 decades before she even started her career. So now if you're starting your career, of course you enter into leadership after some 10 years of career or at least 7 or 8 years of career. But you've already been robbed of 2 decades before. If you have to compensate that from the day you have started, that should be your goal. You should work towards cultivating leadership skills and the qualities and speaking out, speaking loud, mingling with people, talking, be vocal about your requirements. So we have to start from the day one if we have to bridge that gap.
True.
So yes, it is very, very.
I mean, this is our contribution to break the ceiling. Like, if you don't want the break ceiling to be there, then you will have to cultivate this habit that you've lost 20 years before, right?
That's a fact. As I said, there is no sugarcoating.
Yeah.
We are in unfortunate times, so yes, we have been wronged, but we can't cry about that, so we have to do it.
Changes happen, and let us initiate it. Like, now I think the things are changing, and with the children from this age being taught of many things, I hope in the future they really bring a change and make this a better place. Ma'am, and in Infosys, you're much into the technical part of the business, right? You consult and you make the you're more of a technical person. But you have written a book on sales. Co-authored this Decode Sales. Like, what made you write a book on sales?
The book is Sales Decoded. See, management at any point of time, I mean, once you reach a certain level of experience, it is all about revenue. How much revenue you're going to bring in, whether it is direct sales or indirect sales, or whether you're directly selling to customer, or whether you're just upselling your products. It is all about revenue. It's all about how much revenue you're earning. So sales is an integral part of everything. It's not just technology or management or IT, non-IT. Sales is an integral part of every employee's life. Everyone has to sell themselves first. Then they have to sell the product or the service. Sales is integral. But this idea to write a book came sometime 7 or 8 years ago. I think it's back in 2011 or 12. There was this huge propaganda in the market. There were many people, many books written, many people started giving shows and lectures about how to be a millionaire, how to earn your first million, how to get rich in 100 days, how to get rich quickly, how to be rich, how to earn sales, how to do this, how to do that. So that made me think that why is being rich or why is earning a million that important in life? I fundamentally differ with that concept itself, that, you know, be a millionaire or earn this much or become rich or something like that. Because what I believe is, at the end of the day, the value you bring onto the table is more important than the volume. So it doesn't matter how much sales you're doing, how many numbers, it's not the right thing to do. It's not the right thing that you go and sell anything and everything to everyone and earn money and make money out of it. That's not the right way. There should be an ethical way of selling. You sell products to those people who need them. That is all. You know, there is a need and you fulfill that need. In that way, you will give value to the customer who is buying from you. It is something like, you know, you propagate something like fair and lovely. What value is it bringing to anyone? It is not bringing any value to anyone, right? It is business. It's making
problems now. Like, psychologically, many people are very much affected.
And what is the value? I mean, you're not creating any value out of it.
Yeah.
It is not anti-acne cream or something like that. You have a rash, you use it, it goes. Then I would say, yes, this is the value it is bringing. Mm. So that value is what is fundamentally missing nowadays in business. That is where we have businessmen who are doing, you know, such unethical businesses. And their only purpose is making money, not to actually be of help or bring some value or difference to the society. So they usually plunder our natural resources, repackage, sell it to ourselves, make money. So that is not, you know, that millions are actually not the right millions, and that is not the right way. We are not teaching our next generations a good point. So yeah. That made leaders right here. I'm not saying you should not do business. I'm not saying you should not earn money.
Do it ethically.
All I'm saying is do it in a right way. Keep value on top of it, the value you're bringing, the change you're bringing to the business person. Whoever is your customer, whatever you're doing should help him improve his business. It shouldn't, you know, just make you money.
Okay.
So once you bring that value, money will follow. Money will automatically follow.
So it depends upon
that intent. Yeah.
Sorry, ma'am?
We wrote that book with that intent.
Oh, fine. That is a real nice intent, because as you told, it's not just so many years back. Even now, even if you scroll through YouTube, now that from books and movies just come to YouTube, it is even more reachable. That most videos are like how to make money in short span and all these things come. So I hope this book adds, that book does add value to everybody who is reading it. So ma'am, now you've been through, I mean, you've had your own struggles and you've been helping people to do it and you are doing your contribution. So if somebody reaches out to you and tells you that these are the problems that one is going through, or maybe in terms of personal life or in terms of business, what advice would you give them to keep going?
It depends on the problem.
I mean, how do you, it can be anything, ma'am. Like how do you motivate somebody to be a better person or something like that?
Okay. See, there are three important things, but what I always tell my team also, at whether it is at work or at ASRA. One thing is, we usually think our circumstances, the situation we are in, or you know, are brought up or whatever it is what makes us. But what I believe, or I tell others, is it is not that our circumstances that make us, it is our choices that make us. So when a situation happens, you can say that my situation was like that, or you can say that you can choose a way. I mean, the situation that happened is not in your hands, but your reaction is in your hands. So that is what I tell everyone, choose wisely, make your choices wisely. You know, you can become rich is a choice, kindness is a choice, happiness is a choice. It's up to you to make a choice what you actually want to do. That is the first thing, make a right choice. And the choice should be right. You have to do what is right, not what is popular or not what is easy.
Yeah.
You should do what's right, and that takes a lot of courage and that takes a lot of effort and guts to do it. But you have to do it.
Yeah.
So that is what I tell. It's not an easy way to go. Right way is always not the easy way. We have been told from our childhood the right way is the easy way. That's the only way.
Ma'am, so what is success, ma'am, to you? How do you define success?
It's very difficult to define success, because see, I never understand that also, because no matter what we put as a target, say we have some target, and success means you reach the target and you feel you're successful. But then if you reach the target, the immediate thing what you do is you set another target.
Yeah.
And you reach that other target. So there is no end to this cycle. So it keeps going. You keep a target, you reach it, you find another target, you reach that. I think it's an endless process. But what I think is that one should not strive to be a success, but we should strive to be of value. So whatever we do, whether we are successful, we are not successful. I mean, success has many definitions, right? If you ask someone from today's generation, maybe this is successful. I get my first million when I'm 30 years old, that is successful. Someone might think I buy a house, that is successful. Someone might think I have this much amount in my bank, that is successful. What I think is success should be measured in terms of value, not the numbers. So how much value you have brought into your life and into the lives of others, that to me is what is success. So I always tell we rise by lifting others.
Yeah.
So I think
he has become poor by giving it, Mama.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much, ma'am. Like this session itself, I'm sure this session has added a lot of value to the viewers, and most of the concepts that you have spoken, maybe in terms of glass ceiling or maybe in terms of ethical businesses that you do, that is the right thing to do, in my perception too. So I hope this reaches the right audience the right way. Thank you so much for your time, ma'am. And this has been a real fruitful session for us. So
thank you
to the audience. Thank you for staying with us. Thank you. I hope this session has added real lot value to you. Stay tuned till the next episode. And this is Madhumati signing off from Reach Her Podcast. We hear you, and this is the platform for all budding women from across various industries and fields. Thank you.
Reach Skyline. Embrace digital.